Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
1906 Heroes of Glenbrook. So this is a famous story that I'm going to try and tell in podcast terms. So it's these two boys who avert disasters and become local heroes back in 1906. And March the 24th, I think it was probably a Friday looking at it, in 1906, 5 to 5:30 p.m. in the evening. So this is, I think this is starting in autumn. This will be December, January. Yes, start of autumn. So it's still quite warm, and we're in Glenbrook, and we start our story painting a picture, quite literally painting a picture. And this is a Mr. Salvatore, a famous artist, is painting Glenbrook and painting from this view up on the mountains here of the plains and Glenbrook. And back then, whereas it's really forested, 120 years earlier, more than 120 years ago, 110 years ago, the white person came in and cleared all the trees. And we know this from the photographs. You see these hills and you say, I don't recognize that. All the trees have been chopped down. Because that's what you did. You changed the land to be a bit like the rolling hills of Britain. There were still some trees about the place, and we know this. And this person was painting this area, and it began to rain a bit, and Mr. Salvatore took refuge in a house owned by the Scarretts. And the Scarretts turned out to be the heroes of the story. They turned out, their family invested wisely in mines and became very rich and are famous benefactors of large research institutions hundreds or about 100 years later, or 50 years later in actual fact. So that's the story. So this painting begins to rain, and let's talk a little bit about Glenbrook. Glenbrook is a mountain in front of a mountain, or a hill, large 200 meter high hill rising off the plain, barely 10, 20 meters above sea level, suddenly goes up to 200 meters and then drops down again to a sort of hidden primeval valley. If you look from here, it's extremely beautiful. Now, what's happened is over 300 million years, a big river's come through, later a kilometre thick of riverbed, and then around 50 million years ago, Australia's gone over a hot spot, lifted up the riverbed, and the riverbed has eroded with these canyons. And then, almost as an afterthought, 5 million years ago, Glenbrook had its rising up, and it rose up, and the creeks that were going through the area kept their course while the mountains grew either side, and you've got these beautiful canyons, and it's created this little hill. On one side you can see Sydney, on the other side you can see primeval forest, and it's really beautiful. Back then, a lot of it was cleared, up until they just couldn't clear it anymore, so to speak. So there's clearings and things, and people used to have little holiday houses up here, and people would go up here to escape. There'd be hotels along this train line. I should talk about the train line in a little bit. I suppose that's the next thing to say, but before I talk about the train line, I'll talk about the weather, because that's another player in this story. As you know, it's begun to rain, and then it begins to hail, and it begins to hail as if at a rate which is reported, which has never happened again, some sort of mini cyclone, tornado. Trees were ripped up, leaves blown off trees, hailstones so big that they punctured through the iron roofs. Now, remember back then, iron roofs were indeed iron. They weren't, so they could be rusted and stuff like that, or thin. But these hailstones punched straight through them, and the hailstones were so big, they were ripping off branches, they piled up in the gullies, and the ice was there for a full week after the storm. So I don't know if anyone has ever seen that, at least in Australia, ice hanging around for that long. So it was a ferocious storm, the most ferocious known. And this artist took his easel to the safety of this Mount Street house. And there he was with Scarrett father and the two boys. I've forgotten the name of the boys. That's a hole in my head, not thinking of the name of the boys, but the two brothers. Important. And as the storm passed a little bit, they went out to witness the apocalypse that was here. Land had formed huge torrents. There were branches and everything swept up by the water. Now, here it's still quite madness, but to think of water, so much water, that you have torrents of water going through, there must have been a huge amount of rain. And they went out to see it. And all of a sudden, one of the Scarrett brothers saw a train. Now, let's talk about the trains for the moment. Trains were part of the British Empire. There's a single track which went from Sydney, and it zigzagged. So went one way, turned around, the train would stop, reverse up another, just so it could slowly work its way up this huge gradient of this Glenbrook Hill, Lapstone Hill. So Lapstone's the name of the hill in front of Glenbrook. And it went up, and then it finally went over these trestle bridges, because there's heaps of gullies in here, to a tunnel, a very thin tunnel with a high gradient, and up into the Glenbrook village, which is just behind me. And this would go up here, and so the trains would go through this complicated thing, not see what's ahead of them, and they'd have to build up steam to go up this quite treacherous gradient of tunnels. If you imagine most tunnels, you think straight through, but this is the best they could do. They could dig a single little tunnel, a pretty narrow tunnel at angle, so they had to build up to go across it. And at which young Scarrett suddenly bolts through the rain and waves the train down and stops it. Now, you wouldn't see it nowadays because there's trees everywhere. All the trees have gone, and he could see that the track had been washed away. Indeed, about 50 metres of track, or more, about 100 metres of track, was completely washed away, and the train would have built up speed to go up through the tunnel, and round the corner, and everyone would have died. And there's been a series of train accidents, historic train accidents going up through here. And so, and a train law of fast acting people saving it. So there's a culture of heroism associated with it. At which the fireman got out, and the Scarretts, they went up about half a kilometre up the line to tell the station, and the station, the lines were down, we know, due to the storm, but then they were able to telephone up and down. So the telephone lines are not like at the moment. There's about seven bars with all these wires going up and down, because you have a wire going to individual exchanges and all that type of stuff. And they were able to stop the trains, and we now go on to he saved the day, and the artist ran after him. So we know about the artist, he ran after, and he was involved in organising it. Now, what happened is they stopped the trains, and they stopped the trains at Penrith, but there was a big backup. Penrith is the city on the river further down, and it's actually built in the mouth of this huge floodplain. So Penrith is a city, a disaster waiting to happen. It's a ticking time bomb, and we're all sort of wondering what's going on. It's got a lot of wealth associated with it, a lot of politicians, people are building like hell on it, but it's this huge fatalistic floodplain, if you don't know. But back then, but now, they managed to get a crew up, which began to eventually start work at 2 a.m., 50 men. They worked for 3 hours, and we know they all had a big meal provided to them. And by 6 a.m., they had rebuilt the track, trains could then travel again. But it was actually meant that the trains actually had to stop overnight while this was being built. We have to go around, and as the trains went past, they could see the twisted track that was there leading off basically cliffs into the void. So that was a dangerous thing, a solitary thing. And I've been on a train in a fairly similar place where you travel past. Yeah. You travel past the Rex train. It's such a very intense experience to be like that. Now, g'day. Then after the train, so this crew acted very quickly, and it took a whole week before they could get trains going at the normal speed up through this section. But it also meant that some of the trains had to stop, and not everyone was first class. There were people, second class people, who didn't have enough money for food and for accommodation. They were going out for the day or something like that, for the weekend or whatever it is, or workers and stuff like that. And these were stranded, several villages, about 10 kilometres further up the mountains. These people were stranded, and we know a bit about these people because the good people would know about these people, and the houses around built cooked meals for them, provided meals, and the railway was also commended for providing lighting for these poor people. But they were back on their way pretty soon. But it is important that there were people further up, some rich holidaymakers further up, of sort of self-importance. And hold that thought. Now, going back to the culture of heroism, the railway board awarded £25 each to the Scarrett brothers for their quick action and awarded them a medal. These people, the Scarretts, went on to have a famous life of artistry and architecture and fighting in World War II. All this story continues to develop as we go through. For it's there, but we go back in time to 1906, and a rich, I suppose, industrialist lives in. Has a holiday house in Hazelbrook, which is another 30 kilometres up the mountain. He's on the train. He and his wife, they live at Potts Point, which is sort of a fairly well-to-do suburb on the edge of the Sydney Harbour. He thinks this is famous, and he writes them. And if you can imagine the sort of self-importance, like you don't write a normal letter, you write, this is a Victoria Cross stand of bravery, and you would have got a Victoria Cross, but here have these American factory watches, engraved factory watches, gold or whatever they are, and they were given to the two brothers. And these have become sort of like the Algernon stones, the Rosetta stones of Glenbrook history. These watches have been incredibly important because they're part of the story where these watches gone. And we're safe to say that one watch, I think, was stolen, but the other watch is safely guarded in the Glenbrook Historical Society Museum, and it's left us now with the watch, some photographs, and some newspaper articles and computers to slowly put this story together and to pick holes and things and get you a fairly good representation. So we have the story overall that has been told, but I myself, as I suppose a young historian, have seen another dimension to it, and this is the cutting down of trees, which leads to soil erosion, which leads to the washaway. I know I'm going to be lynched for suggesting that a series of things came together, but really there's a whole series of threads of history of the earth's heat rising up Glenbrook, the spirituality of Glenbrook, the cutting down of trees, the progress, the people with different views coming together and thankfully saving the day. Okay, thanks a lot for listening, and I've tried to make this podcast a bit more slightly different flavour from just reading through the actual strict cabaled history, although very accurate. Hopefully this has presented a bit more of a picture.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.